We've been waiting for you. Yep.
Get up here.
Grab a chair. What was your name?
My name is Seth.
Seth. And?
Oh, he's the tax guy.
Yeah, we were walking past you. You pay taxes.
Well, now I feel a little
sad. You better believe it. And who's your friend here? Yes, you. What's your name?
Will.
Will. And just sitting down, Owen. That's you. I read your name tag. What's that? Okay, great. And then in the back, what's your name?
Mr. Chicken.
Okay, Mr. Chicken. All right, I'm going to go with it, Mr. Chicken. Okay. Let me tell you a little bit about myself, and then we're going to talk in just, we're going to talk. So my name is Paul Bastian. I was born in Washoe Valley, Nevada, which everyone says, where's that? You would not be alone. Population 6. And it was not at the edge of the earth, but you could see it from there. So I grew up in a very rural type of environment. When I went to elementary school, they were all excited because they finally got a room for every grade. And before that, it was one room for all grades. I went to high school and saved my money and then served a mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They sent me to Northern Ireland. It was a demilitarized zone at the time, so at any given time I could step out my door and hear automatic machine gun fire. That's a true story. I came back and I decided I wanted to go to school, and I told my dad, man, I'd really like to go to school, and he said, good idea, son, good luck with that, and that was the help that I got. And so I worked my way through college. I got an undergraduate degree in engineering with an emphasis in math and chemistry and physics. And then I went on to graduate studies where I studied material sciences and geotechnical engineering and geoenvironmental engineering. In that interim, when I was trying to work my way through school, the Department of the Navy called. I was starving to death. They made me an offer I couldn't refuse. I raised my hand. I took the oath. Orders were cut. I reported for duty. My first station of duty was the Strategic Air Command Base. That's where they house all the nuclear missiles in Minot, North Dakota. Got back out of school, went to work, and then just progressed up through a variety of things, and now I own my own engineering company. And that's pretty cool. Alan, how you doing, buddy?
Good.
Right here. All right, so let's, topic of today's discussion is doing hard things and achieving great things. So you're going to get bombarded by a lot of things in the world. They're going to talk to you about all kinds of crazy stuff. And it basically breaks down into two different things. Breaks down into what man thinks he knows and what God actually knows. So if you look at that, you're going to be told everything from, whatever, to theory of evolution, which basically means that you're an ape. And based on some people's behavior, that's easier to believe. And nothing you do matters. There's no right or wrong, and there's no actual growth in that. Opposed to that, you have a divine birthright. You're eternal, and everything you do matters. And there's accountability and actual progress. So we get sidetracked in science, science. Anytime somebody says to you this, being a scientist, actually, anytime somebody says to you, the science is in, the science is done, it's all done, you can take it for granted right there that that individual knows absolutely nothing about science. Because science is the challenging of every truth forever, rigorously. And so science is a little bit like a glass of water. If you take your first sip, it might convince you of a lot of different things. There's no God, there's the natural order, the world is what it is. But if you really drill down and drink deeply of that, he's waiting for you in the bottom of the glass. I guarantee it. All right, so we're going to do a thought experiment. Einstein loved these. He's a hero of mine. So I want everyone to close your eyes. Even you, Chicken Man, close your eyes. Yeah, you. Okay, now I want you to imagine yourself. And we're going to do this in some detail. I want you to imagine that right now, we're going to jump into the future 5 years. And I want you to imagine where you are, what you're doing in 5 years. Who you're with, who you're hanging around with, what kind of a person you are, what kind of decisions you make, what kind of friends you have, what kind of activities you involve yourself in, what kind of job you have, how much you make an hour. Let's get specific on this. Okay, now I want you to keep that person in mind, and I want you to go forward another 5 years into the future. Where are you now? Are you married? Do you have kids? What kind of career do you have? What kind of a person are you? Are you the kind of person that people can trust? Do you make the right decisions? Are you involved in something greater than yourself? And now we're going to jump forward another 20 years. Your kids are grown. Now we're going to look back on your life. Can you look back comfortably on it? Are you comfortable with the person that looks out of the mirror at you? Have you accomplished everything that you wanted to do in life? Have you achieved those goals? Okay, you got those three people in mind? Okay, open your eyes. Everything that we just talked about is not going to happen just because you feel good about it. Those things and that person that you saw, they are going to be the result of some very specific decisions that you make about the kind of person you want to be and the kind of effort that you want to put into it. So we're going to go through some steps to greatness right here. Number one, this is going to sound harsh, but today we're going to talk truth. Nobody gets a trophy for showing up. So we're just going to lay it out there. So the first thing you need to do is you need to recognize your own ignorance, right? Because we just don't know it. And even if we think that we do know it, we probably don't. You can spend a lifetime applying yourself to a field of knowledge, and at the end of that lifetime, you still won't know everything about it. You may know 100 times more about it than everybody else, and you still may not completely understand it. For example, who knows who Isaac Newton was? Right? Laws of motion, gravity. Okay. What's gravity?
The force that pulls you down.
Okay. Well, what actually is it?
The law of God.
Okay. I will accept that.
Basically, it's pull a mass has according to its mass.
Okay. Here's the thing about that. We don't actually know why that happens. We don't know. We have no idea. You know, is it the space-time continuum that's being warped? Well, there's a theory that says that. Is it dark matter? Well, there's another theory that says that. Is it quantum entanglement? There's another theory that says that. But we don't actually know what that is. We know what it does, and we have laws that define all that, but we don't know that. And so the first step to achieving great things is to recognize that you don't know, and that keeps you humble. And then you got to do something about it, right? You got to be not a passive passenger in your life. That's one of the things. I'm a pilot, so I fly a plane. That's one of the things they tell you. If things go wrong in the plane and everything is sideways, you don't stop flying that plane until all the pieces have hit the ground. Right? So in your life, you don't stop pushing forward. You have to stay. We need to stay hungry. But hungry isn't the right word. You need to stay ferocious. You need to stay actively engaged in your life so that you do not become a passenger on your way to the crash. Right? So you need to have goals in mind. And then work is king. You need to be able to apply yourself. So what are some of the things? Raise a hand. What do you want to do in your life? What were that person that we saw 10 years out? Who is that? What were some of the things we had out there? Yeah.
Storage unit owner.
Storage unit owner. Okay. Another one? Yeah.
Return missionary.
Return missionary. Okay, that's probably closer, a little 5 years from now, right? Anything else? Let's jump it out another 10 years. What are some of the things that you want 15 years from now? Yes?
Animator.
An animator. Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that for a minute. So how's that going to happen?
If I practice and practice.
Okay. Is there some school involved? Do you think school is easy? No, it's going to take some sacrifice. There's going to be some nights when you're doing homework and working on that when all your friends are out playing, right? So there's some sacrifice involved in that. Let's talk about the storage unit thing. How are you going to get the capital to invest in that and to make that from here to a reality? What's involved in that?
Work.
Yeah, you're going to work and you're going to sacrifice, right? Okay, so who's got a phone with them? One of the first times in class you're going to be able to, I need a volunteer. No, you already volunteered. I need another volunteer. Someone with a phone.
He's still volunteering.
I know, but I'm picking on you. I need someone else to speak up here. You got a phone, Austin?
Yeah.
Okay, I want you to look up Greg.
No. It's phone, but I don't
know. Okay, who has internet? All right, you're it. Finally, I want you to look up Greg Lamond, right? Yep. Greg, capital L, small a, capital M-O-N-D. So this, you got it?
Almost.
Internet
is slow in here, sure.
Okay.
How do you spell it again?
Capital L, small a.
It's like one bar here.
Oh, really?
Capital L, small a.
Big M-O-N-D. Yeah, we might not get it. If we don't, I'll just tell you the story.
All right. Greg Lamond, got it.
Read it.
Okay, I'm going to repeat it, guys, so this is probably not true, but it's loading.
It's what? It's loading. Let me tell you about Greg Lamond while that's loading. So he's a friend of mine when I was a kid.
I got it.
He was subliterate.
You can read this.
Okay, you got it? Okay, read that.
Gregory James Lamond, born June 26, 1961. He was an American former road racing cyclist. He won the Tour de France 3 times and the road race world champions 2x, becoming the only American male to win the former.
Okay.
Lamond began his professional training career in 1981. 2 years later, Lamond became the first American male cyclist to win the road world championship. He won the Tour de France in 1986, becoming the first non-European professional cyclist to win the men's tour.
Okay. That's probably enough. So here's the way that went. So Greg and I were both grew up in this place where there was just nobody, right? We were all alone out there. But when he was pretty young, he found out that he could ride a bike, and he loved to ride a bike. So he started to ride a bike. And he got in a couple of these little races and did pretty good and found out that he had a little talent for it, so he began to work for this. And so we're standing in metal shop class our senior year, and everyone's saying, hey, what are you going to do? You know, what are you going to be when you get out of school? And, you know, all the normal questions. And got to him, and he said, well, I'm going to go to France and show those folks how to ride a bike. That was his comment. It was the Tour de France that he was talking about. So every day, for his entire high school career, he got up in the morning and he rode 70 miles through the Sierra Mountains and made this big long loop. And so when he got to the Pyrenees, everyone started working up those mountains, and they were used to training in the mountains, but they were not used to training on that level. And so he got in there and he smoked them. I mean, he was so far ahead. He was hours ahead at the end of the first day, because he just didn't have to quit. So that's the price of excellence. Think about your sports hero. Let's think about, Dwayne Johnson is, The Rock, right? My best quote from him: I go to the gym 6 days a week and work out 7 days a week. Easy, right? Anybody can do it, huh? Not me. Right? So excellence requires that you have an objective, and that you're willing to put in the time and the effort and the sacrifice to make it happen. And that applies to school. That applies to marriage. That applies to your job. And you put that kind of effort into any job, and you are going to rise to the surface like a cork, right? Because that is an irregular and unusual thing, and it happens. So, now there's a... Anybody know what the Dunning-Kruger effect is? Oh, okay. The Dunning-Kruger effect is this. When we learn a little bit about something, even though we know more than everybody else, we tend to think that we're an expert in it. And we're not, because we just know a little bit about it. So, for example, if I live in a society that can't read, but I learn to read the Dick and Jane novels, or books, you know, See Dick Run, See Jane Swing, that kind of thing, does that make me a literary expert? No, it doesn't. But we get sucked into that, where we know more than everybody around us, and all of a sudden we think we're an expert, and we're not. And so that's rule number one. Recognize that there's still a lot to learn. Part of this, in your learning, verbal skills are critical, reading skills, they're critical, and the ability to collaborate with others. Why would that be important? Why would that be important?
Because we live with other people.
Sure.
We're not by ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're not alone. We're all in the same canoe. Right? Why else would it be important to collaborate?
To build anything lasting and meaningful, you need others.
Right? I would accept that. To build anything lasting and meaningful, you need others. So we're talking about... Oh, please.
Okay. So you're not a burden to others.
So you're not a burden to others? You're pulling your own weight? Gotta love that. Why does an employer hire you?
Because you can work well and you're worth his time.
I would give it to you a little more plainly. He's got a problem that he needs you to solve, and you need to solve it. He's not interested in your pronouns. He's not interested in your drama. He's not interested in the things that are going on in your life per se. If he's a good person, he probably is, or she is. But what he's most interested in is he has something that he needs you to do, and so the best thing you can do is you can make her problem go away, right? You can work well enough that she doesn't have to supervise you, and you can just take care of her problem. What happens when you do that? Stretching? What happens when you do that? Oh, stretching. What happens when you do that?
Most of the time you get a raise.
You get a raise and you get put in charge. And you get to train somebody else how to do that, right? Okay, moving on. Number two, stay ferocious. We talked about that. We talked about Greg LeMond. The minute you say good enough on anything, you know, that's good enough, then you're done. That's as good as it's ever going to get, because you quit. You quit pushing yourself forward, and that's what I mean by staying ferocious, staying hungry. And then, who has a sports hero? Okay, yeah, go ahead. Sports hero, yes?
I don't remember his name, but his last name is Messi or something with...
Messi Ronaldo?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he plays soccer? Yeah. So, why is he your hero?
My dad likes him.
Yeah, that's awesome.
He plays soccer
too. Is he any good at it?
I've only seen a few episodes.
Okay. Do you think he woke up one morning and said, man, you know, I'm just better than everybody else in the world at soccer. I should go play soccer. Do you think that happened?
Could've.
Probably not. He probably has worked his tail off to be good at it, right? Right? I mean, so anytime you see excellence, you can take it to the bank that someone has put an inordinate amount of energy into improving their capacity. Please.
Pele.
Yeah, Pele, same thing. What makes him good?
Practiced a whole bunch.
Practice, 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 right? You know how you play Carnegie Hall, right? Who knows what Carnegie Hall is? Any musicians here? Carnegie Hall is where you go to play if you're the best of the best. So how do you play Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. What was that again?
You just spend a lot of time practicing.
Practicing, correct.
There was, from a seminary teacher, he said, practice doesn't make perfect, practice makes permanent.
Right.
How you practice and what you practice is what you want to
do. Correct, okay. And that leads us to our next item for success, and that is live with intention. Okay, if you don't know where you're going, chances are really good you're going to get exactly there, right? If you don't have an objective in mind, you're going to drift. And I would tell you this, it's been my experience that every single person in this room has the seeds of greatness in them. You just haven't been pushed hard enough to know what that is yet. And life has a funny way of doing that for you. If you can do that for yourself, that's even better, right? Okay, so have goals. Tell everyone about them. Who has a goal here? You in the back with the glasses? Okay, I'm not going to pick on her. Who has a goal here? Yeah, Austin.
I want to start a business.
You want to start a business?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so I own a business, and I myself, personally, am of the opinion that that's the holy grail in America. Develop your capacity, take control of your work, and take control of the money that that earns. And if you can get those three legs of the stool down, you've got the world by the tail. Right? So you're going to get to graduation, and someone is going to step up to the podium, and in a breathy voice, they're going to go, let me see if I can do this. Now we're out of school. Follow your dream. That is horrible advice. That is horrible advice. Don't follow your dreams. Prepare yourself the very best you can, and then you follow your opportunity. And if it's an opportunity in Eastern out or nowhere, and you don't really want to be there, but it's a great opportunity, you go and you get it done and you do the very best you can and you rise to the surface, and you will find that once you get pushed to the very, well, do we have any wrestlers in here? Anybody on a wrestling team?
Well, my brother and I wrestle all the time.
Okay. So when you train for wrestling, it is, or MMA or martial arts, any martial artists in here, karate, taekwondo, judo, any of that, anytime you train for that, it is all about yourself, and you push yourself to the very limit. What happens when you push yourself to the very limit of what you have? There's a funny thing that happens. Anybody know what it is? It's no longer your limit. You can go there because you've already done it once. Can you go another breath longer? Well, probably. That's where doing hard things and greatness is achieved, and that extra effort to do that. Now, some of your goals, like, the storage units, that's a big thing. You might have to break that down into bite-sized pieces. So, or being an artist. Say it again. Animator, being an animator, that might be a hard thing. You know, there might be some things that you break down. Okay, I'm going to get in school. First of all, I'm going to get good grades where I'm at. So what happens when you get good grades where you're at right now, in school? Well, that opens a window of opportunity, doesn't it? If you get crappy grades now, well, that opportunity goes away, doesn't it? If you get great grades, then at least you're in the room to discuss additional opportunities. And then if you get signed up in the classes and you finish the classes and you're successful at that, well, then you're in the next room. And so all of these things, they kind of have a domino effect and they add up. The most important thing is to persist in your own development. I talk to a lot of people in business that say, yeah, I'm going to invest in the stock market and I'm going to make $1 million. I'm going to be rich. And don't do it. Don't do it. If you're going to invest in something, invest in yourself. Invest in your own capacity to produce, to perform, to accomplish, and to complete. Right? Most important thing you can do. And then at the end of the day, Those all go with you. You get to keep those forever and ever, as long as we both shall live. And you will find that the more of that you do, the more opportunity you have. So, when I got out of high school, I needed money, right? Who doesn't need money? And so there was an opportunity to go work in a gold mine. And it's hard labor. My first job was, first of all, they run you down a mine shaft. So you're 2,000 feet below the ground. And you're in these tunnels, and it's raining warm water all the time. And you're standing in water just about halfway between your calf and your knee. And they got me down there, and my job was to take a 16-pound sledgehammer, about like that, and to break rocks. They would bring rocks back and dump them out on this grid that had 10-inch holes through an I-beam in it. And my job was to take these rocks that were, some of them, you know, as big as these podiums behind me, and break them down into pieces that were small enough to fall through those holes. And I did that for 10 hours at a whack. And the first day, I was so tired that I couldn't eat when I got home. It just took everything you had. And there was a time when they brought this rock back, and it was about as big as those two put together. And I went to work on that rock. Man, I wailed away on that thing. And so they'd bring it in, I'd break the small ones down, I'd go back to work on this big one, and I was working away on it. And I had about 4 hours in on this rock, and I couldn't get it to break. And there was a miner there that came back to eat his lunch, and he watched me do this. And he's sitting there having his sandwich, you know, and he's watching me like this, and I'm thinking, what's wrong with this guy? He's just standing there watching me. And after he finishes his sandwich, and he puts his lunch away and everything else, he goes over and he gets a crowbar, big bar of steel, and another rock, and he takes this big rock and he pries it up like that, and he rolls it over on the other side, and he dusts it all off. And then with one hand, he takes this hammer, and he swings it like this, and he goes, and he hits that rock like that, and that whole rock goes right in half. The moral of that story is, you can work yourself to death with things that don't work for you. Don't be afraid to change your tactics. And this is what he said to me when he handed the hammer back to me. It isn't how hard you hit it, boy. It's where. And then I started to pay attention. You know, every rock has a joint pattern. Everything has a seam. There's a method to this. And in life, you will find that everything has a method. And sometimes it isn't how hard you hit it, but it's where you apply your effort. So in your goals, you should be thinking about the things that are going to produce the efforts you want. The rental units, the degree, the job, the career, the lifestyle, right? Okay. So we got to evaluate and report your performance. What happens when you evaluate your performance? When you really critically look at how well you did, what happens?
You improve next time.
Yeah, you do, right? What happens if you evaluate and then tell somebody else?
They can watch out for you.
The rate of improvement increases because nobody wants to go back to somebody and say, well, yeah, I just did that same mistake again. Nobody wants. So if you evaluate, you improve. But if you evaluate and report and are accountable, the rate of improvement increases. Okay. So, what I had a chance to work with the Navy, I hung around with a lot of guys who were EOD, that's Explosive Ordnance Disposal, and SEALs, and all those kind of guys. And, you know, they're a funny group. But they have a rule called the 40-60 rule. Anybody know what that is? This is a cool rule. Because it applies to all of you. How much time do we have?
She knows.
Yeah, you do?
Is it 60 hours of work in a week?
Nope, but it's an idea. So the 40-60 rule is this. When you go into the training program and when you go to achieve something, you will work to the point where you think you can't work anymore. You think you've given everything you've got. And what they have found, and is actually true, is that at that point, you've actually done 40% of what you're capable of. There is 60% remaining in the tank. It's just a matter of motivating yourself to do it. And their whole training program is based on this. They'll put those guys into the ocean for 10 hours at a time till they are frozen solid. Now, the ocean isn't frozen, you say, but the ocean is 55 degrees, and your body temperature, when it drops to 55 degrees, you may as well be frozen. And they will think, in that training, you will think that you cannot do one more minute in the water, but it actually turns out that you can. And by applying this rule, they reach the limits of what they're capable of at the time, and then they realize that their limits are actually much more than they think they are. That's how they do those incredible things. Like run for 100 miles in 48 hours. That's happened, all right? Pack a buddy out 25 miles in 12 hours. That's happened. So the capacity that you have in you is just phenomenal. The problem is we all live far below our potential to achieve it, and we never achieve that. And I would say this to a group of young people. If you don't take the time and effort to achieve the physical and the mental greatness that is within you, you'll be disappointed. Because y'all have it. Every single one of you has the capacity to be physically and mentally amazing. And that can be in dance, that can be in music, that can be in science or architecture, that can be in social relations, that can be in, you know, public health, that can be in charity, that can be in giving, that can be in anything. Make it an intention of yours to achieve the greatness that lies within you. Now, that's not like, hey, I showed up at my T-ball game and everybody got a trophy for showing up, right? Life doesn't work that way. Your generation has more opportunity, more benefit, and an easier life than any generation ever in the history of the world. And if I'm not mistaken, you may have been told that you're the greatest generation ever. Let me disabuse you of that notion. You're not.
Thank you.
Yes, you have the capacity to become that, but you're not. And until you actually put in the work and the effort, now you start with the leg up, that's true. But until you put the effort in, it doesn't occur. It doesn't occur automatically. So, what happens if you do all this and your dreams aren't realized? I got a funny story. Not my story. I'm quoting it. Gal tells a story about when she was a kid, they used to have an Easter egg hunt. Every year they'd have an Easter egg hunt at Easter, and her father would hide the eggs, and in one egg he would hide a $5 bill. And so she was among the older of all the cousins, and so it was her objective to find that egg. And so, man, she put the effort in, and she looked in every place that she could find. She planned days before where she thought that thing might be hidden based on what she'd seen in the past. And so she really, you know, did this whole mental approach to this thing. And she found the egg. And she opened it up. Trying to keep this PG here. Inside the egg was one of those little plastic eggs all painted gold. Inside the egg there was a piece of dog poo. And it broke her heart. And she went back to her dad. She said, "Dad, how could you do that to me? I put in all this effort. I put in all the time and everything to find this egg. And then I get down to it, and there's that inside. What's up with that?" And he goes, "Listen, in true dad fashion," he said, "you have the lesson about putting in the work and enjoying the benefit. The lesson you need now is you can put in all the effort and still have things not work out the way you want. This lesson is what you do with that now. Do you get back up and do you go back to work, or do you fold in and collapse and say good enough and that's it and you're done?" That has application to life as well. There are going to be times when you get the grades and you get the effort and you get the degrees and you still don't get the job. You know, life's funny that way. The question is, do you fold up and quit? Or do you take a breath and realize that you have that capacity within you and go forward and make it happen anyway? Right? Because we're talking about doing hard things and exceptionalism, and that's one of the hardest things that any of us will ever be called on to do, and every single one of us will be in that position sooner or later. You can take that to the bank, so prepare yourself now to get up, dust yourself off, and get back to work. The only time you really fail is if you quit. So we live in a society that basically rewards merit. And I think of some of the people, Bill Gates, everybody know who Bill Gates is? Yeah, right? There's one story about him that I really like. When he was trying to, it's just one, right? So when he was trying to get Microsoft put together, he needed to be on a plane, and he was late to the airport, and the plane had already pulled out. And they told him at the gate that he couldn't get on the plane. And he said, I'm not having it. And he ran through the checkpoint there with his ticket in his hand and ran down the gate, found the door at the end, ran down the stairs, ran out onto the tarmac. The plane's backed out. He runs out to the plane, waving his arms to the pilot. They let him on the plane. Right? So in this life, you're going to get a lot of no's. You don't get what you deserve. You get what you won't live without. Think about that for a minute. No one's going to serve it up to you and say, oh yeah, this is what you deserve. You get what you won't live without. So when I was out of school, I went through the process of putting together resumes and sending them out looking for work. And I was taught a really important lesson, and so I'm hoping that I can teach that to you right here because it is fundamentally valuable. I put out maybe 50 resumes. It was a bunch. And I got all these rejection letters back. Thank you, Mr. Bastian, but we've decided to go another direction, and we're not going to do that, Mr. Bastian. And so I'm sitting there, and I've got this handful of no letters. And my father, bless his heart, he said, you know, you ought to go by and you ought to talk to the people that sent you those letters. I said, what? That's crazy. They just gave me the gate. Why would I go talk to them? And he said, you know what? You ought to go talk to them just so you know who they are, because, you know, you make connections in this business, and it's important. So I practiced this little speech, and it went something like this. Here's the rejection letter you sent me. I appreciate you sending me this letter. I appreciate you taking the time. I want you to know who I am. I can get your work. I can do your work, and I can keep you out of court. I just wanted you to know what you were missing. And I gave him the letter back with another copy of my resume. From that, 6 job offers came. And then I got to be a selector and not an acceptor. Fundamentally, they're looking for someone that has the moxie to solve their problems. They're not in the business to give you a job. They're in the business for you to solve their problems. And then the more you demonstrate that you can do that, the better off you're going to be. The more opportunity you're going to get. All right. So I'm going to go for a couple more minutes here, and then we're going to open it up to some question and answer type stuff. This is going to be tough. I'm probably going to offend some people, and I'm sorry. The apology is built in. Don't ever accept someone else's thought processes. You do your own homework. So when you hear things, opinions made on things like global warming, free Palestine, gender, Black Lives Matter, Y2K, you know, life and plight of the polar bear, it doesn't matter what it is. Don't fall into that whole process where we have a little bit of knowledge and we think we know a lot. You do your own homework. And that means you have to drill down on it. And you have to really drill into it until you not only know everything there is out there currently to know, but you've also sat back and thought about it. You know? And then decide for yourself. Don't rely on someone else to tell you what the truth is. We have a source. If you really want to know, but you don't get the $1 million answer for the 10 cent effort. You have to study it out. You have to determine it in your own mind. And then we have a way to check that out beyond what we think it is. I used to get a kick out of this. So I had a group of friends that I had in my undergraduate work that went into molecular cell biology. Anybody ever looked into that? That's a fascinating thing, right? And so they were all about the evolution of the cell, and a lot of them had no faith in a divine power or a greater creator or their own divine spark or any of that. And they all started saying, yeah, this is about cell evolution, and it's just going to be what it's going to be, and life is what it is. There's no right, there's no wrong. You know, this is all just natural occurrence and this and that. And then the second year, I talked with him, they said, yeah, all these fantastic things are happening. We're looking at the micromolecular machinery in the cell. Because when Darwin came up with the theory of relativity, the cell model was a bunch of ectoplasmic goo, and then the hereditary information in the middle. What we've learned since then is that there are all kinds of molecular machines that are involved in the working of a cell. And by the third year, all of them were like, well, we don't really think all this could happen by chance because all of those pieces had to come together exactly right in the first place. And you reach a point where there's an irreducible complexity. That's the term they like to use, the irreducible complexity in the cell. And so we think that, you know, we're not sure. And then by the time they were in their senior year, they're like, oh yeah, there's a creator for sure, 100%. That was the same thing Einstein came up with. He said, the more I know, the more I realize is that we have a creator, that there is an intelligence guiding the things in the universe. He's correct. And they were correct. Remember that glass of water, right? The first sip. You come up with one conclusion, but as you drink down all the way to the bottom, there are some very profound things that are in the bottom of the glass, but you have to go all the way. You have to get that knowledge. Knowledge is a funny thing. I mean, you can spend your lifetime and still only set up questions that your kids will answer, and that's the way we are, and that's the beauty of the whole thing. With that, I did tell you that you weren't the greatest generation ever. You have the potential to shine extraordinarily brightly, especially the people in this room. You have the chance to shine with extraordinary brightness. Part of that is realizing who you are. And we talk about doing difficult things, and my uncle was a prisoner of war in Germany. He was 185 pounds when he went in, and he was 94 when he came out. He was my size. And he talks about his experiences there and what allowed him to survive that kind of brutality. Please.
What's your
name? Shadow. He's a basketball player.
His name is Shadow?
No, that's what everybody was his nickname. Everybody called him the Shadow because he couldn't be guarded, right? So it was, but his name, Uncle Ellis.
Was what?
Ellis.
Ellis.
Ellis is. And, so he talks about that experience, and he said that, you know, when you're pushed to the very extreme, those three legs we talked about, the spiritual, the physical, and the intellectual, he said if you leave one of those things out, you know, you become a monster. History's replete with the people that you left the spiritual component of their greatness out, and they just became monsters, you know. There's Hitler and Mussolini and Pol Pot and all these horrible people that did horrible things to get what they want. And so in all of our doing, we need to remember and retain that spark of who we actually are and the birthright that that makes possible for us. Now, unfortunately, in high school, in any school, there's a situation for us to not be so nice to each other, you know? Or for others to not be nice to us. And you had to bully and pick and whine and moan. And I learned an important lesson from a turkey farmer. Anybody know how they farm turkeys these days? In the back, yeah?
They farm.
What kind of housing does a turkey have on a turkey farm?
A barn.
Yeah, a barn. I mean, they're like a quarter mile long, some of them. And they're just packed, just turkey to turkey. And they found that about five or six turkeys in each barn, the other turkeys would start to pick at them until they made them bloody, and eventually they picked them to death. You know why they did that? They finally figured it out.
They want space.
Mineral deficiency. There was a mineral deficiency in the turkeys, and that's what caused it. So when you see someone who is picking on somebody else, there's a need there that hasn't been met. There's a deficiency, right? First of all, don't be that person. And second of all, look at that person and think, you know, something there needs some help. You know, I know you're being a bully. I know you're picking on somebody, but that's not coming out of a vacuum. You know? Doesn't make it right. But there's a plea for help right there. So, in all our doing, we need to realize that sometimes we have to be the one that holds the greater standard, and the seeds of greatness lie in that. If you can be your best self. Okay. I'm going to open this up for questions. You can ask me anything we want. You're all in that emerging adult stage. And so, yeah, let's try to have a conversation here. Question?
Share a couple of your stories of failure and how you rose above
them. I failed at everything I tried. Everything I've tried, I failed at the first time through. Straight up. Got my pilot's license. Didn't pass the first time I went after it. Failed miserably. Like to ride a motorcycle. You know, tipped it over during the test. Right? I was that guy. Failing. Oh, and so when I went to high school, 16-year-olds, raise your hands. Okay, boys. Height and weight.
5'8", I think I'm 130.
Height and weight.
6'2", 300 pounds.
You're killing me. So, when I went to high school, as a senior in a high school that had, I was bused into Reno to high school, there were 4,000 kids in my school. 4,000. Think about that for a minute. I was the smallest person. As a senior, I was 5'2 and 85 pounds. Nobody ever picked on me. Oh, man. You know, what's that?
You were already picked clean.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, you know, you learn to take one and you try to make it as miserable experience for them as they can so they won't do it again. That's what you get out of that. But big adversity. When I took the PE exam, this is fun. So when you get out of school with your undergraduate degree and you go for your professional engineering exam, you have to work for 4 years for a licensed engineer. And basically, you're a slave. When they say jump, you yell how high on the way up, right? You just do whatever they tell you, and you do it with a smile on your face, and you do the very best you can. And then after that, you get to go take this exam. And it's a two-day exam, 8 hours a day. And I studied for probably a year for that exam. I mean, man, every night I was cracking the books, and I was doing that, and on the weekends, and I was doing all these things. And I was then into my graduate studies, and I was moving on with that. And I figured, man, I got this test. I am so ready for this test. So I go in to take the test. I get out the first day and I'm thinking, man, I smoked that test. You know how that feeling you get where you just knew the answer and you knew the answer? That's an awesome feeling. Second day, same thing. I get the results back and they say, well, Mr. Bastian, we're sorry to inform you that you failed. And now the egg and the dog poo comes into view here. And I think, you know, that was the very best that I'm capable of. That was everything I had, man. I put everything into that and the very best I could do. And maybe it's it's not too late to learn to drive a truck, you know, because I'm sure not going to be an engineer, because I can't do it. Obviously, I can't do it. And so again, my father, bless his heart, he says, well, you know, you at least ought to go down and review your tests so you know where your mistakes were. So, you know, it is really tough to go and revisit your failures and really get them up close and, you know, have your nose rubbed in it. That's a hard thing. So I go down, I go to the Board of Engineers, they pull my exam up. They say, you want to review your exam? I said, yes, I do. So I got the key. And I started looking at the first test. And these things, these problems, you know, they take a full page to work them out. And so you work out, there's all these lines of computation and calculation and everything else, and you get down to the bottom, and the answer is like one, or minus one, or two, or minus two, or zero. And there's no partial credit. So you've either got it and you nailed it, or you get zero credit. So I get down to the end of that thing. I'm looking at the key, and I'm looking at the problem, I'm looking at the key, and man, it's just verbatim. And I'm thinking, how come I got 0 points on this? And so I take it to the chairman of the board of engineering for the state, and I say, listen, look at this. I didn't get credit for this. And so he says this. He says, so what you're saying is you deserve more credit on this. And I'd say, no. What I'm saying is I want this problem to be graded according to the key. And so I went through the key, and it turns out that there were some big errors in the way that test had been graded. So I said, I want this test regraded. And I got photocopies of it there, and I couldn't take the key, but I got photocopies of my test, and so now I knew where I was. So they regraded that, and about, I don't know, a couple months later, they sent me the results of that regrading, and they said, we are happy to inform you that we graded the first day's test, and you passed. And I think I had like a 88%. And then about 6 months after that, I got another thing in the mail that said, well, we regraded your second day's test, and it turns out we used the wrong key. So here's your final grade. I was not disappointed with that final grade. Yeah, it was. So if I would have just said, okay, I got the dog poo in the egg, that's me, I'm done, I can't do it, all those years of college are wasted, I'm out, I'll never be able to do it. If I'd quit and become a passenger in my own life, that would have been that, right? So in adversity, you owe it to yourself. And even if you failed, go back and find out where you failed. Because those are the seeds of real growth. And they are hard. Man, that is a hard thing to do, to look yourself right in the eyes and say, man, you've been measured and found wanting. That's a tough thing to do. Yeah, question. Any questions over there?
What business do you have?
I have an engineering business. We do civil engineering, geotechnical engineering, and environmental engineering. So we do all the things that all the other engineers are scared to do.
Explain what services you've given to Pocatello.
Oh, so the big flash cube firm you were building up here, they put that in and it was starting to settle. And settled about 6 inches, and so they hired us to go in and underpin. Yeah, so just the whole building was moving, and another 6 months, and they had to vacate the building. It had been a total loss. So we went in, and we figured out how to do that, and we put that building on stilts. We drilled down into the center of the earth, and we found something a little harder, and we built these stilts, and we jacked that building up. And right now, you don't know it, but that building is on stilts. Same thing with the Wells Fargo building down by downtown here, down in the center.
By Winco.
Yeah. So we just got through doing the piles for the temple, the new temple in Rexburg that's going in. I wanted them to put a moat around it. I didn't get my wish. Because I thought a moat would have been really cool. They have high groundwater there anyway, so why not? I did some work for NASA. Turns out they like pure water. And in part of all of my career, I designed oil water separators for offshore platforms that will take oily water and separate the oil out of it down to 5 parts per million so they can put it back through a filter system and then back into the ocean. And that was pretty cool. But I spent I don't know, a long time on
the platform. Give them a little message about people that promote green and then people that fix the environment.
Talk's cheap. Don't be that guy. So I am a huge proponent of stewardship of our earth. We've only got one. But there is a big difference between yapping about it and doing something about it. You want to be in the camp of the latter. You want to drill down on knowledge until you have enough knowledge to actually make a difference. Because, you know, making your voice heard is one thing, but actually making a difference is something else entirely. They are two totally different things. And so you want to be able, and making a living is pretty easy too. You know, you graduate from high school, you get a decent job, you're going to make a living. And you'll have pretty much everything you need and some of what you want. And, you know, that's easy. You go to college, every year of college you spend, you're going to make, on average, statistically, you're going to make about $5,000 more a year than you would without it. If you get a four-year degree, you're going to probably make $20,000 to $30,000 more a year than a high school graduate. If you get an advanced degree, you can bump that up by that much more again, right? And so the world rewards merit. Doesn't matter what anybody tells you. It rewards merit, the ability to produce and perform. If you're gonna have a voice on something, do the rest of us a favor and at least go through the effort to really know what you're talking about. And then talk about it if you do. And get ferocious about it if you do. Please.
I'm just on your 5 minutes.
Okay, 5 minutes. All right. Any more questions? Nobody wants to know what it's like to live on an oil platform rig out 300 miles out to sea?
Exactly.
Yeah, your whole world becomes five levels. And you're there for months at a time. And the winds blow and the storms come and the icicles are about that long and horizontal. So we're putting in a piece of equipment that I had designed, by the way, the oil water separator. And we were on the very lowest level and we saw a great white come up there. And it was about that big around.
It's a
bait. Yeah. Big enough to bite me right in half. I figured I didn't want to go swimming. And then about 2 hours later, I saw the cook down there. And he had this long pole with this four-prong gig on the end of it and a little cup of rice. And he was throwing the rice out there and the fish would all come up and he'd throw that thing in the water and it was tied to his wrist and he'd reel that thing up with a fish on it like that. Guess what was for dinner?
Sure.
Yep, they had a four-star chef and he was making these fish for dinner and it was delicious.
Got some sushi?
Yeah. Well, you can have about anything you wanted. And that's one thing about the platforms is the living conditions are actually pretty great and the food is fantastic. You're just away from your family for a long time and there's a penalty you pay for that. But, again, don't follow your dream. Follow your opportunity because that opens some really significant windows for me. So, support. Any more questions?
How old are you?
It's not the age. It's the mileage. I'm 63 years old. But I feel great. And, I'm going to continue to do what I do. I like to, I like to scuba dive. I like to free dive. I like to spearfish. I like to fly a plane. You know, I like to ride motorcycles. And when I'm 85 years old and taking my wife to the frozen yogurt place, I want to get off the motorcycle when we get there. What's that?
Do you own a plane?
I do. It is a Cessna 177 RG. So it has a big motor in the front and retractable gear. So it's high performance and complex.
Yeah, you're on runway?
I have my own hangar that goes out onto a public runway. And that's pretty cool.
How was it to be a fighter pilot?
Oh, I wasn't a fighter pilot. I'm a private pilot. So to be a private pilot is pretty cool. You see the world from a whole different perspective. I mean, you see those fluffy clouds up there every day, and you look and remember what that's like. It's cool to see them from the other side, right? It is really cool to see them from the other side. So, and it's a time machine. Go ahead, question.
What's your kind of opinion on military?
So, If you go in as enlisted, you are going to take orders. And you are going to get the GI Bill. And that's the very best you can hope for. If you take it upon yourself to go to college at least 2 years before you go into the military, 4 years preferably, with a degree that matters, and I'm talking about a degree that is not community organizing or underwater BB stacking, but something that people will really pay for, right? Something that somebody will pay you for. You go in officer corps, and as an officer, the military is pretty hot deal.
Paul, I think they have programs now where you can start out your first year in an education leadership officer position.
So I would say that. If you're going to go the route where you're going to go in and then you're going to get the opportunity when you're in, you better make really sure that it's in writing and it's in the contract, because if it's not in that contract, you can forget about it.
Is it tiring being awesome?
You'd have to ask my wife. What does my wife do? So my wife is the administrator for our company, and it is a quite successful company, and so she does all of our billing, our reporting, our payroll, and handles all of the details on projects due, when they're outstanding, and so it is an organizational nightmare. And I've done this for some of the biggest companies in the U.S., and she is by far the best administrator I've ever had. She keeps me straight.
How long have you had your company?
So we started in 2006. I was 44. That seems old, doesn't it? I was 44 when I started this company. So, man, never, never quit. Stay ferocious. Stay engaged. Be the pilot of your own life. Don't give up. And do not. That's the worst thing you can do, is quit on yourself. So.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for coming. Thank you.
Thank you.